I'm eager to preach. It doesn't seem that way, but I really am. Tonight I want to talk to you here about something that will help you talk to other people about the Lord. And I know it's something that we all want to do, and yet it can be intimidating. Am I right? And it shouldn't be that way. And sometimes we get real complex. There are all kinds of things that, you know, we can tell one another to help one another be better at witnessing. And they're all good. A lot of good things. But what I want to talk to you about tonight is so simple that it's not something you probably need to take notes on. Part of it, maybe, you might want to jot down. But the thing that I want to give you, I want to give you three stories. I had a fellow from Tennessee come visit one time, and he was a storyteller. His name was Tommy Oakes. If you ever get a chance to hear this guy, you want to do it. He's a great guy. And he did something interesting. He got up and he said, "When I was a boy and I went to church, the pastor would always have 3 points and one story." He said, "I never remembered what the points were, but I always remembered a story." So he said, "What I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to do what Jesus did. I'm going to tell 3 stories and make 1 point." Doesn't that sound like a great idea? And so he told 3 stories, which seem unrelated, but by the time he got to the end, he made the 1 point, and it was very powerfully made. Tommy Oakes was the first guy to receive a master's degree in storytelling from East Tennessee State University, which, when I heard about that, I thought, that sounds pretty cool. A master's degree in storytelling. Anyway, these are 3 stories, and if you use 3 stories, it'll help you when you witness. I'm going to tell you those in a minute, but before we do that, I want to give you 3 things first that will help you, keep you from being discouraged when you feel like giving up when you're witnessing to people, all right? And so I kind of knew it would be the Green Beret tonight, and I knew it would be real special people that would be here tonight, need to be here. So I want to give you these 3 things, okay? And then I'm going to give you the 3 stories, okay? 3 points, if you will, 3 stories, and whatever else I feel like talking about. I checked with my wife tonight. She said I can preach as long as I want. This morning I was under strict orders to quit at noon. You'll notice I was obedient. And there was ham and party potatoes at home, and so I had to hurry home. And tonight I can preach as long as I want. I'm just kidding. So, yeah. So let me share these 3 things, though, that are, I think, really helpful to be a good testimony and to win, to influence friends for Christ. You don't have to be Billy Graham. It doesn't hurt, I don't suppose, but you don't have to be Billy Graham. Let me tell you what you're not, and let me tell you what you are. And these are the 3 things I'm talking about. You're not the Lone Ranger. You're not closing a deal, and you're not depending on your own skill. You're not the Lone Ranger, you're not closing a deal, and you're not depending on your own skill. In this business, if you want to call it business, of influencing other people to follow Jesus Christ, you are not the Lone Ranger, and you're not closing a deal, and you're not dependent on your own skill. You're not the Lone Ranger. You're a part of a team. And many places in the Bible talk about the fact that you're a part of the team. As a matter of fact, in all the places that the Bible talks about spiritual gifts, and Lord willing, in the future, we're going to be talking about spiritual gifts. But in all the places where the Bible talks about spiritual gifts, the Bible is really kind of telling us there, is implying very strongly that we are a part of a team. That it isn't just one kind of person that's effective in influencing other people for the Lord. And listen to what it says in John chapter 4, verses 37 and 38. And of course, you know, this is in the context of the woman at the well, kind of one of the evangelism stories of the Bible. In John chapter 4, verse 37, it says, "For in this the saying is true, one sows and another reaps. I sent you to reap that for which you have not labored, others have labored, and you have entered into their labors." In other words, somebody does some sowing, somebody else comes along and does some watering, somebody else comes along and might reap. And maybe you just walk in and reap, but you don't want to be confused and think the reaping is all there is to it, because there's been planting and there's been sowing. I knew a guy up north in Michigan that fly fished on the Asable River, and he tied this special fly called the Zoo Cougar. Doesn't that sound cool? And it worked great. I've seen people fish this fly. They wade upstream, and it's a streamer. It's like, it looks like a little fish under the water. And they cast this under a bank, and they pull back the line real fast. It's called stripping the line. They strip the line back really fast. To watch them do it is kind of like an art form. They'll cast this streamer up under a bank. They'll strip it back, and it's like a little minnow darting away from the bank. And it must be really attractive to fish because they love that fly, the Zoo Cougar. I know one guy, that's all he fishes. He says, "If they're biting on that, I'm fishing. If they're not biting on that, I'm not fishing." I know people who are really not bad in evangelism who only do it one way. And frankly, to be very honest with you, I've met people who have one way to do evangelism. It's not a very good way, but they do it so frequently and they do it so faithfully, they have a lot more fruit than people who have a better way that they don't use. I know one guy, he witnesses everywhere he goes. He's like the zoo cougar guy. But you know what? I've known other people that fish with bloody liver and a big hook. Like down in Florida. Did you guys eat too much today or what's up? It's kind of looking at me. Like you take a big hook, you put it in a big hunk of bloody liver, you kind of flip it around over your head. Nobody gets close to you that way. You toss that into the ocean, and if there are sharks in the vicinity and they don't eat, you know, bathers and stuff, they might bite on that. There's lots of different... Okay, the illustration didn't work, okay? I'm sorry. There's lots of different ways to fish. There's lots of different ways to witness. There are many different witness vehicles that are legitimate witness vehicles. And the scriptures really are actually teaching us. It's almost like golf, if you will. You know, I know guys that when they golf, they don't even take a driver because the driver gets them in so much trouble. That's not my temperament. My temperament is I don't care how much trouble I'm going to get into with my driver. I wouldn't think of going golfing without a driver. I don't go golfing that often because it's dangerous for people around me and I feel like people will sue me and take all of my books or something when I hit them, you know, with the ball. But I love hitting that driver. I got a big Bertha driver. It's so big you can't miss as big as a van, you know. You just can't miss the ball with that thing. And you can wail into a ball. It goes a long way. I can hit the ball literally almost as far as Tiger Woods. That's the truth. I'm serious. I'm a pastor. I wouldn't lie to you. I can hit the ball almost as far as Tiger Woods. But hitting the ball far isn't the deal. I can't hit the ball straight. Tiger Woods, on the other hand, he can hit the ball straight. He can fade. He can draw. He can put the ball where he wants to. Me, my ball usually starts out straight, and then it goes way over there to the right, like Rush Limbaugh. Everything goes to the right, you know. But I'm just like slicing a ball off in the woods. I mean, it goes way out there in the woods. But you notice that a good golfer is going to have a number of different clubs in the bag. He's got a putter. He's got a sand wedge. He's got a 9-iron when he's in tight. He's got the driver when he wants to go for the water and everything, right? And God has lots of clubs in his bag, too. Different kinds of people. They do different kinds of things in different circumstances at different times. And that's what it says there. You are not the Lone Ranger. You are a part of the team. Play your position. I was playing football in school, and I remember this guy who was a lot better football player than me. He says, you get the first guy through. We were playing defense. He turns around, you know, he's just barking orders to me. And he was a good football player, and he was big, and he was smart, and I wasn't any of that. And he turns around, and he says, you get the first guy through. Take the pier putt. Take the first guy through. I'm like, yeah. But it was like, over my head. First guy came through really fast. Just like, oh, that was him. I thought, oh, nuts. He's behind me. I mean, he was really behind me. He's behind me like in the end zone behind me. And he just, it was just like pitch and catch out in the backyard. They just threw him the ball. He scored a touchdown. And that guy comes over to me and he goes, did I tell you to get the first guy through? Pierpont, you got to learn to play your position. I was like, okay. So I'm sorry. He was so fast, I didn't see him. It's like we're a great team if we all play our position. That is really what this passage is saying. One is a watering person. One is a sowing person. One is a reaping person. Or different times and different things. There's a variety here. And it's true about spiritual gifts. And we can go into detail about that. But that's not the point. I just wanted to make that point because it's really encouraging to know that you might be fixing a toilet and it's a part of nudging somebody closer to Jesus Christ. Or you might really be Billy Graham, really laying it down, you know, giving the gospel. You might be some great apologist with all kinds of great, you know, obtuse arguments for the faith. And it's just what they need. And you might not know any arguments for the faith, except for your own life, and you're a part of that. And so you are not the Lone Ranger. You're a part of a team. That's really encouraging when you want to influence people for the Lord. Second, you're not closing a deal. It's not like cheap kind of like peddling kind of sales. I know what I'm talking about because I've done this kind of sales before. I'm not really bad at it. I can't earn a living doing it, but I can like stave off starvation. I've done that. Just peddling things. You know, there's a difference between a person who really kind of knows their product and knows how to help people and somebody that's just hustling stuff, you know. But I've done that. And sometimes I get the impression when people are witnessing, they're just hustling. You know, they're like, here, you know, take Jesus. And they got a little spiel that they've worked out and they don't want the people to talk. They just want to kind of lay it on them, you know. Don't say anything. Just say the right stuff at the end. Sign on the dotted line. You're going to heaven, I promise. But that's not really biblical evangelism. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't you know, and we'll talk about that. I'm not saying that you shouldn't kind of have a plan about how you're going to talk, but you're not closing a deal, you're planting seeds. Look in the Bible in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, and here you have another passage that's similar to the one that I read in John. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 5. Who then is Paul and who is Apollos, but ministers through whom you believed as the Lord gave to each one? I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. Now, he who plants and he who waters are one, and each one will receive his own reward according to his own labor, because we are God's fellow workers. God, it's something that God is doing, and we're involved in it. We're planting seeds. We're not closing deals. There are a couple metaphors in the Bible kind of for witnessing, and you know, one of them is planting seeds, and the other one is harvesting. Fishing. Fishing is like you go out as fishers of men, you catch a fish. Farming is like I plant a seed and I wait and see what happens. They're both right. They're both legitimate. Sometimes you've heard stories, all of you. I mean, you're Baptist, right? So you've heard stories about people who got on an airplane and saved everybody. I'm kidding about that. That's not the right theology, I know. I just think if you're paying attention. They got on, they witnessed, the person repents in sackcloth and ashes. You know, they become a Baptist evangelist themselves. By the time the flight is over, they're all singing the hallelujah chorus. You know, the stewardess was weeping, and the pilot is a pastor. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You've heard stories like that before. It's not a good night here, I can tell. Yeah, anyway, I've heard a lot of, I grew up on stories like that. And it made me kind of think, like, I don't do it that way. I don't go out and save the neighborhood like Superman. And they all repent immediately, and they all get saved, and then they all live for the Lord, and they all want to be baptized and tithe and everything. It just hasn't been that way for me. I've been tempted to believe, well, I must not have the power of God in my life. You know, have you ever felt like this? No? Well, I've had this experience, and let me just give you my testimony about it. I mean, I've just had the experience many times all my life, really, of witnessing, because I heard these wonderful stories, which are good, because, you know, if you tell stories, they're going to be stories of successes a lot of times, right? And you tell these stories, and you think that's the way it's supposed to look. You just give the gospel, the person repents, immediately they follow you to church, they get baptized, and in a couple of weeks they're a deacon, and everything works like that. But it hasn't worked like that. Matter of fact, let me give you an example of how it's worked for me. I remember that we were coaching baseball, and we invited some people to a little Bible study, some people that weren't followers of the Lord yet, but they were interested in hearing about what it would mean to be a follower of the Lord. And so we met together in the living room of Dan and Barb Donegan, and we went through a six-week Bible study with these people. And when we got to the end of the six-week Bible study, I know that we had very carefully explained the gospel to everybody, and you could see by looking in their eyes that they really understood the gospel, but nobody made a profession of faith. And I kind of drove away thinking, I know that that was good ministry. Even though nobody got saved, in my heart, I had a feeling in my spirit that was good. That was a good work. I know that I faithfully delivered the gospel. The last night, the sixth week, Dan and Barb gave their testimony about how they came to know the Lord. And it was just beautiful as everybody just sat and listened to them tell how they got saved. And it was years and years later that my sister called me on the phone. She and her husband were out doing deputation for missions. And she said, guess what? I was in Mount Vernon, Ohio, and I bumped into a couple that were there that night. And they're faithfully following the Lord now. And they said to make sure and tell me that we made a contribution to that those years ago. And that's what I'm trying to say, in that it's just faithfully, you're not closing deals, you're planting seeds. And those seeds can take so many different forms. Obviously, technically, to plant a seed, the truth of the gospel has to be explained to somebody. But there are things that make people, you know, open to the truth of the gospel, like being nice to people, mowing their lawn, giving them your lawnmower when their lawnmower breaks down, going over there when they're scratching their head and they, you know, it looks like they're going to blow up their battery with the jumper cables getting crossed or something. And you go over there at a time like that. And that really is a kind of an element there of evangelism, if you will, of really caring about people. Anyway, that's the second thing. The third thing is you're not dependent on your own skill. Because conversion is a miracle. Let me review those. Number one, you're not the Lone Ranger. You're a member of a team. Number two, you're not closing a deal. You're planting seeds. Number three, you're not dependent on your own skill. You don't, you know, like I was joking before, you don't save people. God saves people. You're not the one who does that. You just get, you have your part. Your part is deliver the goods. Tell them the truth. Love them. Joe Aldrich has a couple of really good books on evangelism that I've really enjoyed over the years. Lifestyle Evangelism is one of them. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. And another one that's really good, well-written, humorous, called Gentle Persuaders. Beautiful book filled with anecdotes about how real evangelism works. I've really enjoyed those books, and they've been helpful to me. One of the things that he says in the book is to see people kind of on a continuum towards Christ and just kind of bump them along the continuum and be sensitive to them where they are, realizing that God is at work in their life. And you're depending on God for a miracle because conversion is a miracle. You're not going to fast talk somebody into really being saved. It's a miracle. So you're going to love them. You're going to give them something. You're going to care about them. You're going to do something. And I love what it says, and I read it before, 2 Timothy 2:25 and 26. I'm talking about those who are in opposition, who haven't received Christ yet. We correct them with humility because God perhaps will give them repentance so they may know the truth and may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil where they've been taken captive by him to do his will. We went blueberry picking one time this summer. It was really a hot day. And we found this blueberry place and we rode the trailer out to this blueberry place and started picking blueberries, and I learned something kind of neat about blueberry picking, and you probably know this already, and that is the biggest, juiciest, most wonderful blueberries just fall off in your hand when you touch them, right? Because they're ready, they're ripe. And if you got a yank on them, they're going to be kind of hard. And all analogies break down, but there is a kernel of truth in that. And that is if you have to save somebody yourself, well, you probably saved them, you know what I'm saying? But they're not probably genuinely converted. Does that make sense? But when God is at work in somebody's life, and then you come along and you just gently and lovingly and faithfully, you give the gospel and you love people, and then every once in a while, somebody just drops into your hand. It's like, whoa, I firmly believe that it is God who gives the gift of repentance and faith. God does that. It's a beautiful miracle. When he does that, it's a sweet thing to behold. And what's our job? Our job is to tell the gospel to whosoever will. Everybody. Tell it to everybody. And so those are the three things that I wanted to give you. Now let me tell you the three stories. This is kind of a little, I don't know how to put it. It's sort of like a technique. And in a way, I just got through talking about not using techniques. So it's a way that you can think about how to get conversation about the Lord Jesus going in a way that I really believe honors the dignity of the person that you're talking to, and it's natural. And also, I'll tell you, one of the benefits of this is that you won't be nervous. You don't have to remember a bunch of stuff. It won't make you all nervous. It's just really simple. It starts out very naturally. Three stories. Are you ready? Here they are. The first story is their story. First thing you want to do is, when you get involved in a conversation with somebody, or talking with your neighbor or a family member, just say, it's basically you're kind of saying to them, tell me your story. Their story might really be a horror story. Their story might be really scary. Their story will probably be really wrong. They'll probably tell you things they believe that will make you think, oh my goodness, I can't believe they believe that. Because that's the way people are. That is their story. And you need to know their story. You need to hear their story. You need to listen to them. I know me, I talk a mile a minute, and I have to work really hard at not talking too fast so people can actually tell what I'm saying. I think a lot about what I'm going to say. It's almost, it's almost a curse. It's good and it's bad. Because influencing people, I really am learning more and more the older I get. Influencing people is about really hearing people, really listening to people, really hearing their heart. Even to say that to me kind of convicts me inside because I'm so eager to talk myself. That's my basic temperament. But people will tell you their story. Maybe this is more true with older people than it is with younger people. By my observation, this is just my opinion. But I've noticed that especially older people, they've lived a long time, and do they ever have a story to tell? But they will not tell it until they are convinced that you are really going to listen. Not that casual, like, how are you doing today? And you're not really listening. You're waiting to say something yourself. But like when you sit down, pull up a chair, and they really think this person really, and then they will start opening up. We had a lady in our church, her name was Alma Johnson. She was like a lot of you ladies. She's like the, can you say, pillar of the church kind of a lady. Just a precious, godly lady. She was the one who taught all the girls as they went through the Sunday school. Alma, everybody had been in, all the girls in the church, all the young women in the church had been in Alma Johnson's Sunday school class. God had done a really beautiful work. She had a sweet testimony. She sang so beautifully. Do you remember that? She would get up and sing, and you could tell that when she was really young, she had a very fine voice. When she was older, she still had a fine voice and had some years on it, but she just had this depth of communication when she would sing these songs. She would call me before I would preach, and she would say, Pastor, what will you be preaching on? Because I want to sing something that will help people to see what you're going to say. And she was really careful to just share sometimes a word of testimony. She would sing. Precious lady. When I got done preaching, every once in a great while, she would go out. She would shake my hand. She would hold my hand a little bit longer. She would look me right in the eye, and she would say something like this, Pastor, that was a good sermon. And whenever she did that, it meant a lot more to me than a lot of people because I had a high regard for her. She, Alma, got cancer and died. And I was asked to do her funeral. And at her funeral, we talked about her. And she, you know how people that walk with the Lord kind of preach their own funeral. And the folks that showed up. But at the end, we had her sing at her own funeral because we had her singing on a videotape. And when she got to the end of her song, it was just a beautiful song, and the auditorium went quiet, and there was just a sweet quietness all over the auditorium, and you could hear people weeping. And then the videotape, it was kind of a home video, it kind of flickered a little bit, and she came back on. And when she came back on, she was standing in the back of the church, and somebody was kind of goading her, oh, come on, Alma, go ahead, you can do it, go ahead. And she did. She began to yodel. She, the pillar of the church, she began to yodel. I mean, it was comical. Now, everybody's got something in them like that. You just don't know it. People do. You got to listen to them for a while. You got to act like, you got to actually care about them to get them to tell you things that are important to them or that are unusual about them. And I just have a feeling that a lot of people really aren't going to hear us about what's so important that we know they need, but they don't know they need unless we really care about what they think they need and what they want to talk about. And so the first story is their story. It's like, you tell me your story. Here's some of the ways you can do that. And this is just a clinical thing. It's a practical idea. Smile at people when you see them and say, I like you with your eyes. Now, of course, if you're a young lady, like you're working out in public, you might want to be kind of careful about this. You know, you want to kind of balanced it. Anyway, smile at people. When you see people, smile at them. Like, I like you. Tell people you like them by the way you look at them. You can do that. I like you. I value you. I care about you. You're important to me. Tell them that by the way you look at them. Embrace people that way. Be the kind of person that likes people. And you can do this. Say with your heart, when you talk with somebody, even that you don't even know yet very well, say with your heart, I want you to be as happy as I am. I want you to be as happy as it is humanly possible to be. When you talk with people, have your heart say that. When you're getting coffee from somebody, in your heart, say in your heart, I want you to be as happy as it's humanly possible for you to be. Imagine what it would be like for them to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And then I have a question that I often use at a time like this that is a very precise question. You want to be careful how you answer it. But if you use this question, it's a technical question. A lot of people may not see this. If you use this question, you won't believe how it opens up conversations. Like if your name is Ken, you would say this. Hi, I'm Ken. What's your name? Did you guys want to write that down? Seriously, you know, just you're saying, hi, I'm Ken. What's your name? And then go from there. You know, I'm going to take a little rabbit trail because I was so disciplined this morning. I was up in Fremont one time, and I saw this guy in an Ohio State hat. You don't see Ohio State people up there very much. You got a few strays around here, amen? But up there, that's like, they're rare. And he had this Ohio State hat on, and I struck up a conversation with him. And one long after that, he finally showed up at church. I had ministry with his family. I ended up preaching his funeral. Sounds tonight like I preach everybody's funeral, doesn't it? But it was because I saw something to make conversation with because I wanted to talk with him. And it was just a good thing he wasn't a Michigan fan, you know, because then I would have just ignored him completely, I'm sure. I'm just kidding. It was just an excuse to talk to him. And then when you want to look at people, and you probably know this, and just say, what is there about, you know, that's unusual about them that I can create conversation? So you can say to them in so many words, tell me your story. And you want to probe into them by asking follow-up questions, show that you're really interested. And if it works, I think a lot of times you're going to cross, if you have time, you're going to cross over into that kind of special place where they really see you're sincerely interested in their story, and they will start to open their heart. It's shocking how quickly people will open their hearts and tell you a whole bunch of stuff. And I can't tell you how many times people at this point have said to me, I don't believe I'm telling you this. I haven't told anybody this. I think, wow. That's what you want to do. You can ask simple questions like, do you go to church? Do you believe in God? I mean, just simple questions. Does your family go to church? Were you raised in the church? Yeah. Somebody said this, and it's a little formulaic, no pun intended. But think, when you're talking with somebody, one way to think about this acronym, F-O-R-M, think family, occupation, religion, message. But think first, tell me your story. And that would be like, you probably remember me telling a story about walking up to the pagan and getting surprised, and that was the thing. Well, what does a pagan believe? Tell me your story. And she began to tell me why she believed what she believed. It was quite interesting. And so when you have somebody else tell you their story, try to get them to make that story as long as possible. Ask follow-up questions. It may be that is all you do is listen to their story. And you might feel a sense of urgency. We don't know when Jesus is going to return. We don't know when people are going to die. We don't know if we're never going to get to talk to people again. And if you're conscientious about that, there may be a simple way for you to give them some kind of gospel literature or an address to a website or some simple way where you really do give them the salient points of the gospel. But the main thing initially is that you really are listening to people and you really are asking them to tell you their story and you are really interested and you look them in the eye and you ask lots of follow-up questions. I think it's powerful when people do that. And I sometimes I've been with people that are good at this and they will find out more about a person in a few minutes than I will find out about that person in a couple of hours because I'm so wanting to tell them stuff. And they're asking them questions. So that's the first story. The first story is, tell me. Their story, thank you. Their story is a powerful story to hear. So get them to tell their story and try to make it as long as possible with follow-up questions. So I've run that in the ground, but that's important. Now the second story is your story. In other words, you could say it's your testimony. How do you come to know the Lord? And what has Christ meant to you? And you want to do that. You know, you get them to tell their story as long as you can. Your story, you want to make it as short as you can, almost as short as you can. It's a very simple, you actually have to work hard to make your testimony real clear, brief. I heard somebody say one time, you ought to be able to give your testimony on an elevator, on and off, that quick. And one way to do this, like I might do this, is I might say, when I was a little boy, I would lay in bed at night and I feared death and I had guilt. And I asked my dad about it, and my dad said, when I was your age, I was the same way. I was a little boy, I feared death, and I had guilt, and I asked my mom, and you guys have heard me tell the story. I asked my mom didn't know an answer. It took me 21 years to get the answer to those questions, and I never did get the answer to those questions until I met Jesus Christ as my Savior. He died for me to take care of my guilt and to give me eternal life. And my dad explained that to me when I was only 5 years old. And I believed in Jesus Christ for salvation. That's my testimony. If you were to time it, it was probably inside 1 minute. That would be like a 12-story building on the elevator. So get a couple of testimonies. What has Christ meant to you? Like in my case, it was guilt, fear of death. It might be something else where the Lord has helped you. And you can kind of use that as a hook, if you will, to hang the story of your conversion on. So that you can just tell them what Christ has meant to you. And you can include the gospel. You tell your story. You give your testimony. It doesn't always have to be really, really, really short. But you want to be prepared to give your testimony with and cut away the stuff that's going to confuse people. And cut away the stuff that's kind of weird. We all got weird stuff about us. Everybody's a little bit weird, you know? Isn't that true? And so don't say the weird stuff. Let them find the weird stuff out later. Just
Give the gospel real clear, real simple. And if you've had unusual visions or you've done kind of ecstatic and unusual things, save it for later, you know. Tell them some other time. If you had weird dreams in the night, you know, chalk it up to the pizza. Don't assume it was an angelic visitation, you know. Just stick with the gospel and go with the mystical stuff later on. And so, okay. And then, aren't you glad you came tonight? Your story. So you should have a couple of versions with this. In a way, one way to do that is to think, what problem did God help you deal with? My daughters are not necessarily career-oriented. God might put them in careers, I don't know. But they really haven't been raised that way. They're not really career-oriented. That's just our thing. And so every once in a while, people expect girls to be career-oriented, and they say to them, so what are you going to do? And they kind of feel like, well, if they say, I'm planning on getting married and having babies, it sounds like they want a date right now, you know? And so that's kind of weird. And so they've kind of like, how do I answer that question? As an example, I said to them, here's one thing you could do. You could say to a person who asked you that question, you know, I've really devoted my life to Jesus Christ. I believe that everybody in the world is either going to spend eternity in heaven with God or away from the presence of God. And my job is to help people know for sure they're right with God. Do you know for sure you're right with God? All of a sudden, like, the pressure's somewhere else now. And the person's like, whoa, this is a missionary we're talking about. They're focused. I don't know what you're doing. Maybe you do have a career in mind. And God has different things for different people. What I'm just saying to you, though, is you prepare to have a ready, clear, bold, biblical answer, a story to tell people. You listen to their story for a long time, you tell your story real short, and then when you get a chance, you get to tell the story. And I want to suggest that you ask permission to tell the story. Their story, your story, the story. Their story, what they believe, you want to kind of get down to what they believe. You want to get down to what they're counting on for their guilt or for their sin or their religion. You want to get to that part. You want to kind of unearth that. You want to tell your story about what you believe without even necessarily saying, well, I don't agree with you. Just go, hey, thank you for telling me your story. They might go, what about you? And they might not. They might kind of pause and you might kind of have permission to go into your story. And it might be completely different than theirs. It's just they told your story. They told their story. You told your story. It's very natural, you know, socially to do that. And then ask permission. And I tell you what I like to do. I like to personally, my favorite way, it's not the only way, but my favorite way, this is a personal thing, is to ask permission to set up an appointment, to sit down with them and explain to them the story. Because then it's like everybody knows ahead of time where we're going with this, and you have a chance to have people praying, and then you're going to go sit down, and that's the agenda, you know, that's already there. And I can remember some wonderful times. I was up at Lake Ann, and I was speaking at Lake Ann at a snowmobile retreat. Those are fun. You don't have to own a snowmobile. You don't have to, you know how the snowmobile runs. You know, they pay you. You don't pay them. It's really a good deal. I wish they kept doing that. But anyway, they had me come up and do this. And, you know, they're like, I'd never been on a snowmobile. They go, it's easy. I go, okay, I'll follow you. They take off. I took off with them, you know. It was a lot of fun. They were like, hey, not bad. You know, I just thought, you know, I didn't want to get left behind. So, you know, I was with them. Got done, preached to these guys, and there was a guy there named Scott Henderson, a young guy, precious young guy, didn't know the Lord, but he just kind of kept hanging around, and he showed interest. And you know, you can kind of tell when God's working with somebody, just kind of be sensitive. And this guy just was a young guy, and he was in a little bit of a romance that was kind of hurting him, and so he was tender because of that. And then that, what's the lodge there with the fireplace with the moose head? Sunrise. Sunrise? Work with me. Don't make me do this all alone. Yeah, Sunrise. It was in the Sunrise Lodge. We're sitting there. Fire that night, he comes, he pulls up a chair, and he starts to ask me questions. We sat there for hours and talked about the Lord. And I asked him if he was ready to receive Christ. He said he was interested, but he wasn't ready. I said, well, you don't live far from Nuevo. Let's meet at the River Stop Cafe. And we'll sit down, and I'll draw you a really cool picture. I was going to show him what they call the bridge illustration. I'll draw you a really cool picture that will explain this to you. I'll never forget the night he met me there, and I just sat there. Chuck was with me, my son. 2 hours, we just sat there. Sweet time, just talking about the gospel. And this kid came to know the Lord. He's walking with the Lord today. I mean, he's really walking with the Lord, loves the Lord. Girl broke up with him. But he got saved and went to her church, and she went somewhere else. It wasn't just that he was interested in the girl. I mean, God got a hold of this guy. I just love that kind of thing. Don't you just love being involved in ministry like that? So what you want to do is you listen to people's story. Don't panic. You don't have to like fast talk them. Just listen to their story. When you get a chance, tell your story. And then when you can, ask permission to tell the story. And it might be you bring a video over. It might mean you go, hey, let me show you this on the internet. And you show them like a site on the internet that shows the gospel, or you send them a site, or you give them a video or DVD to watch, or a message to listen to or something. Or you might invite them over and just spend time with them, and you might have an agreement that you're going to talk about that. But you get permission to tell the story. Maybe you've learned the Romans Road. That's fine. The four spiritual laws of tract. Certainly the EE training, you ought to do that. That's probably the Cadillac of the gospel presentation type programs. This is the EE program. And you know, probably know this, but in the EE, the Evangelism Explosion Program, they'll give you these really powerful questions to ask that just can kind of unlock conversations. And I've had people that didn't know the Lord tell me, hey, let me tell you this question a guy asked me one time, as if I'd never heard those questions before. He's like, this is a great question. And I would suggest that's a great investment of time to get involved in the EE program and just let yourself, and I just thank God we have that here. You can be coached in that. And that doesn't mean that your best evangelism is going to be cold calling, you know. Thank God for any kind of evangelism that happens. Maybe the most effective evangelism isn't cold calling. Maybe it's not, but at least you kind of are preparing yourself. And so whatever, preach on the street, go door to door, invite people over, you know, gently, sweetly, kindly, get involved in conversations with folk after church in a real loving and kind and gracious way. Whatever. Use the bridge illustration, but it's the sweetest thing to be involved in. Their story, your story, his story. When I was a boy, my dad, he's been a lifelong witness. He's been faithful. And when I was a boy, I remember that we stopped in the country. My dad was pastoring a church in Wayland, and I was just a little guy. And we were on our way to church one morning. It was a Saturday morning or something, I think. And we would stop at this old farmer's house to get eggs. We'd buy these brown eggs from this farmer. I would sit in the car. Dad would go in. He would make small talk with the people, and he would buy the eggs, and then he would come out. And I remember this one particular day, he went inside, and he didn't come out for a long time. When you're a pastor's kid, you get used to stuff like that. Parents have long, interminable conversations, and he was in there with one of those long conversations. And when he came out, though, there was an extra spring in his step. I remember he was probably a pretty young man at the time. He jumped off the back steps, and he ran through the yard. He got in the car, and he said, Kenny, they accepted Jesus. And he told me what happened. He said he got to witness to them, and they were interested. They were open. He gave them the gospel. And they both just teared up, tears fell, and they both prayed to receive Christ. And then he said that the farmer, the old fellow, he got up, and he reached in his back pocket, and he got his wallet out. And he opened up his wallet, and he reached in, and he got a few bills, and he said, Reverend, what I owe you for this today? And my dad said to him, you know, this has already been paid for. It's free. Now, I remember my dad's joy. I remember his enthusiasm. I remember thinking, that's what I want to do with my life. Tell people about the Lord. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. And if you're like I am, it's easy to get discouraged, and it's easy to kind of give up or cave in or just become kind of critical of the way other people do it. Don't do that. Try listening to people's story. Try getting your story down to a real short, clear story and get really good and prepared to tell the story and then invite people. Can I ask you this? And then we're going to sing. As a matter of fact, I chose song number 509, Make Me a Blessing. But before we sing it, I want you to just answer yourself an honest question. And that is, when was the last time that you asked somebody permission to explain the gospel to them? You may not, you know, you may not always be able to lead somebody to the Lord. You may not always be able to lead somebody to the Lord, but you certainly can say to somebody, could I tell you something that's really, really important to me? Make it really clear it's not a business opportunity, you know, so they will meet with you. But this would be a person that you already love, somebody that, you know, you've already kind of, you've loved them, you've listened to them, you're their friend, you may have given them things, you may have done things for them, you've wept with them, you've laughed with them, you've celebrated with them. This is a person, in many cases, where you really kind of have the relational stock, if you will, that you could say to them, I would love to sit down with you sometime and just explain to you something that's meant all the world to me. I don't know what I would do without it. And I remember telling a guy that one night, him saying to me, thinking maybe he'd schedule way out in the future, him saying to me, if it's this important, why don't you tell me right now? And this guy's my brother-in-law. He's a deacon in the church where my son is a youth pastor right now. He's one of the finest Christian guys that I know. God used a bunch of people, not just me, used a bunch of people to bring Bobby Dunbar to the Lord. I like to think that you know, out in the highways and byways of life. Many are weary and sad. You know how the song goes? Carry the sunshine where darkness is rife, making the sorrowing glad. You know the verse of that? Tell the sweet story of Christ and His love. Tell of His power to forgive. Isn't that sweet? Let's sing that song together. Would you stand? 509, Pastor, come and lead us in that song.